So, welcome to our Saturday night gathering. The first string is taking the night off, and second string has been pulled into action here after quite a long period of time of not having given a reflection. We'll see if the verbal facility still works. I've been on retreat, as I think most everybody knows, here at the monastery for quite some months now, and have been really enjoying the extra space and time to just be in the forest and practice kind of a simplified schedule, just coming down for food and walking back up to my kuti, and a lot more time for formal practice, quote-unquote formal practice, walking meditation, sitting meditation, and also quite a bit more time for reading and the suttas and different explorations, Dhamma explorations. So it's been really, really nice. It's the first time I've really ever had in over 20 years, the opportunity to take this length of time with this kind of simplicity in my life. You know, and it's not that things have stopped happening. I still find myself engaged in enough things to raise up some defilements and you know, keep me on my toes, watching my mind and not getting too wrapped up in things. But plenty of time to work with those and see them with a bit more clarity. Very, very much appreciated. And looks like I'll be doing it for maybe another month or so. My original plan had been to kind of stick with this schedule of calling retreat through the Vasa, this coming Vasa, to make it a complete year. But as it turns out, I'll instead be going up to Pacific Hermitage with Lumpa and Anagarika Thai for the Vasa. So probably leaving towards the end of June for 4 months or so, and so it's about another month or so of this very special time. One of the focuses that I've been engaging with throughout the retreat, but kind of hitting a high point in January, is doing some readings and reflection on, you know, specifically related to meditation. This is a meditation retreat, an opportunity to do that, and around the samadhi and jhana and those kinds of topics, and ended up reading a manuscript that was very beneficial, and I still find reflecting on it and some of the ways that it expounds on that topic very useful in helping to reframe my meditation experience. And we even had a couple of weeks of tea time discussions with some of the community around that subject, which I found very, very useful, hearing different people's questions and ideas and thoughts and reflections around this topic. And it's been very helpful in terms of reframing some of the ways that we can approach practice, particularly in the meditation and contemplation. And just a very brief little foray into that, I've talked about a little bit in a couple of other talks some time ago, but just particularly reframing this whole notion of samadhi and what it is and what it means in our practice as, you know, Samma Samadhi being the eighth of the Eightfold Path. and how a lot of my programming, anyway, and I think a lot of most people's programming, has produced, for some people anyway, a kind of a difficult relationship with the whole idea, concept, practice of quote-unquote samadhi, it's really, I found it very beneficial to kind of reframe how I hold that. What does it actually mean? I think, you know, many of us have a conceptualization of samadhi as, you know, often, most often translated as concentration, as something that it is something that we are trying to get. We're trying to get samadhi or develop samadhi to get, you know, to get peaceful, to get concentrated, and that it's something that we develop by concentrating our attention on an object. That's how you get samadhi. So we come into it with this whole frame of reference, this mind state of needing to focus our attention very closely and persistently and consistently on an object in order for us to develop a concentrated, peaceful state of mind. So, you know, you can, you know, just hearing myself say those words, it kind of makes me a bit tense. And I don't know if others, I expect maybe at least some others kind of have experienced this for themselves as well. And I found it very useful to reframe the whole approach to how conceptualize that and then practice with it more towards a sense of developing a practice that results in a very easeful, peaceful, composed, simplified state of mind that's pleasurable, that we can sink into, and that it is a result rather than a practice. And reframing it and using some different translations, like the words composure or collectedness, I found very, very useful. Words are very powerful. Words are very powerful, and the connotations that they have can make a huge difference, I think, in how we approach something. So when I think of something like composure, you know, my mind relaxes a whole lot more than when I think of concentration. You know, oftentimes we also, the word one-pointedness comes, or one-pointed, like one-pointed concentration. That's what we often hear, one-pointed concentration. That's what we need to get. And we try very hard. we try, and you know, can get very exhausted and very frustrated. But if we think of it more of like, rather than one-pointed concentration, thinking of it more as unwavering composure. And the unwavering part comes from the mind just wanting to be there. It's not having to be forced to be with a particular object. It's just developing certain reflections and ways of holding our experience in our meditation that results in this easeful, composed, very pleasant, very natural state of mind. And when one experiences that, one naturally wants to kind of sink into it a bit more. And, you know, you just keep on reinforcing that and developing that in a sense, or feeling the results, I guess, is the best way to put it. Feeling the results come in that way. Then the mind just naturally wants to stay there with it. And it becomes unwavering rather than one-pointed. So unwavering composure is a way that I like to think of what sama samadhi means, unwavering composure. So, and it's really clear in the suttas, I think, despite some of our conditioning from the way the teachings have been brought to us, I think really clear that the way that how that happens, how does it happen? How does sama samadhi, how does unwavering composure actually happen? Well, it's not, again, like I said, not through concentrating on an object, you know, focusing one's attention on an object per se, and excluding all other experience. But as it's pretty clear from the suttas, the basis for samadhi is right mindfulness. So developing sama sati and practicing with that as a mindfulness practice, you know, it's, rather than a narrow focused, you know, one pointed effort on a particular object. We use mindfulness as our basis for the development of samadhi. And the Buddha talks about that in many different ways in the teachings. I like to keep it pretty simple and straightforward. There's a lot of references to the practice of sati, samasati, and the qualities that come along with it. Most notably, the three qualities of that one develops in relation to the path factor of samasati of ardency, clear awareness or alertness, and mindfulness. So, atapi sampajano satima. I think, you know, of the ways, that, in many ways that sati and sampajanya especially, mindfulness and variously translated in different ways, sampajanya, clear awareness, full awareness, clear comprehension. I just prefer the most simple definitions, if you will, that are most informative for developing the practice. And you know, there's different ways that both of those terms are defined and used and, in the suttas and in the commentaries. But one of the ways that I think is most straightforward is when the Buddha, for instance, in some of the suttas, asks, and this is like, I think, from the Satipatthana Samyutta, you know, it's like, how is a bhikkhu mindful? A bhikkhu is mindful when one practices contemplating the body in and of itself, contemplating feelings in and of themselves, contemplating the mind in and of itself, and contemplating phenomena, mental phenomena, in and of themselves. That's how a bhikkhu is mindful. And that's obviously just a simplified way of saying the four satipatthanas, looking at the four frames of reference. We just remind ourselves, you know, sati has such a strong connotation with remembering and reminding, to be present when we're if we want to practice, quote-unquote, practice mindfulness, then we establish our awareness, our attention, within one of those frames of reference, body, feelings, mind, phenomena. And that's what right mindfulness is all about. And then also, there's even more kind of ways that the term sampajanya is used, and various definitions, various commentarial approaches or qualities that are pointed out in relation to sampajanya. When you look at the word itself, I'm not, you know, much of a Pali person, but kind of teasing out the word itself, sampajanya has the root of knowing, anya, knowledge, knowing, and then has two amplifiers or, you know, modifiers, sampajanya. So, like pajana, pajanati, has the connotation of directness, like direct knowing, like in the Anapanasati Sutta, if you remember the first bit about one directly knows a long breath is a long breath, one directly knows a short breath is a short breath, pajanati. So that's a kind of a direct knowing as opposed to a conceptualized knowing. There's an abstract knowing. We can all know things, know concepts and ideas. But pajana generally has the quality of a direct experience. So directly knowing is a bit less conceptual and more right to the point. And then some pajanya is also another amplifier, which just has a connotation of like fullness or completeness. So we have sampajanya, which would be like full or complete, direct knowing, is one way of conceiving it. The commentaries go into some descriptions about sampajanya, including many aspects like purpose and suitability and various other kinds of things, which some of you have no doubt read and explored. I tend to, again, like to keep it for contemplative reasons, for using it in meditation and reflection, a bit more straightforward. And the ways that you can see it described in the teachings in that contemplative way are a couple of different places. One that most people are familiar with from the discourse on mindfulness itself, the four frames of reference, the foundations of mindfulness, Satipatthana, in the section on the body, when it talks about sampajanya, clear comprehension. Knowing, and this is particularly in relation to the body, knowing the activities directly knowing and fully directly knowing the activities of the body. So as you're moving through space, not only the four postures for sure, but that one is mindful and one is clearly comprehending all of one when one is engaged in physical activity. We make this our frame of reference. We say, okay, I'm going to adopt a frame of reference of the body and the movement through space. So walking back and forth, extending, stretching one's limbs, reaching for something, bending over, standing, different positions, clearly comprehending with eating, with sleeping, lying down, with talking, all the various activities, even urinating, defecating. These various activities we do with clear, direct experience, and we try and stay quite present with the body in all of its activities. So this is the classic way of describing the contemplative way of practicing with sampajanya in relation to the body. And even in sitting meditation, when in a still posture, one practices with sampajanya, with clear comprehension, you can even just really focus your attention on the subtle movements of the body. Even when you're, quote-unquote, sitting still and not moving, you are. The body really never stops. Even if it's subtle little twitches or movements or the muscles in the face giving a little twitch or swallowing, slightly adjusting your posture, it pretty much happens constantly because the body is always almost automatically moving little bits and pieces to keep a bit more comfortable. You can see it just by watching all the subtle movements. Even the breathing, of course, is a subtle movement. So just being aware of that kind of movement of the body, even in the subtle state. And also, the rhythm of the breathing, of course, the the gentle and rhythmic expansion and contraction, and the flow of energy through the body can be very much of a felt experience, a directly known experience. The somatic presence, I always like the words that Ajahn Suchito uses to describe the somatic presence. So just developing that sense of full body awareness, even in the sitting posture, much less when you're, say, doing walking meditation. And this is our ground. This is really the ground for meditation practice, this full awareness, this full presence of the body. And it's so hard sometimes, you know, because we live in such a conceptually oriented world, to move from that realm of abstraction and conception and thinking and all of the mental activities and just keeping it simple back with the body, which is why walking meditation is so beneficial, particularly if, say, you're going up to your kuti in the afternoon and looking for an afternoon of some practice to, you know, really consider starting to get that sense of somatic presence through doing some walking meditation, because the grosser posture of walking is very conducive to a pleasant abiding, really allowing our attention to rest as the body moves back and forth and back and forth, and just feeling the full sense of the whole body as it does that. And then as the mind settles, the body settles, the body really acts as kind of an absorption for all the mental activities that can kind of drain off the excess of mental energy into the bodily formation, the activities of the body, the presence of the body, the gentle vibrations and ways that the body expresses itself, the energies that flow through it. Very grounding. Really get this sense of presence and grounding with the full awareness of the body. So that's one area where the Buddha talks about sampajanya that's useful for practice, I think. And then also other places, teachings where more of the mental qualities are looked at with sampajanya. In, you know, some of the suttas, again, in the Satipatthana Samyutta, how does a bhikkhu develop clear comprehension? One practices clear comprehension or sampajanya in knowing when a feeling arises, as it persists, and as it ceases or passes away. That's practicing with clear comprehension. When one knows a perception as it arises, a perception as it persists, and a perception as it passes away. When one is aware, fully comprehending, fully experiencing a thought as it arises, a thought as it persists, and a thought as it passes away. This can be, this is one practicing with full awareness, with full clear comprehension. That's also, you know, in one of the suttas where people are talking about where the monks are talking about the wonderful and marvelous qualities of the Tathagata, the Buddha, enumerating so many different, you know, wonderful qualities around his birth and his enlightenment and his teaching and all these kinds of things. And the Buddha hears those and says, yes, yes, all that's true. And then he says, he kind of sums it up and finishes up the discussion with saying, and another wonderful and marvelous quality of the Tathagata is just what I said, that arising, persisting, and passing. The Buddha knows the arising, persisting, and passing of feeling, perception, and thought. And that's another wonderful and marvelous quality of the Tathagata. So I find that's a very useful, simplified, contemplative way of thinking of the term sampajanya, practicing with mindfulness and clear comprehension. And it's kind of pointing to the ebb and flow of these mental experiences, feelings, perceptions, and thoughts. And it's useful to maybe tease those out a little bit. You know, I think that, you know, we think of, I find it's a nice way to keep them in my mind is the whole aspect of sampajanya with the body and the mind as looking with clear comprehension at the kaya sankhara, which is the bodily formation, and the citta sankhara, which are the formations or the fabrications of feeling and perception, and the vachi sankhara, or the thought fabrications, verbal fabrications. So, you know, those are the three doors we often hear of activity, kaya, citta, and vachi sankhara, the three sankharas. And clear comprehension knows all of those as they are. Talked about the kaya sankhara a bit already, but, you know, feelings and perceptions, the citta sankhara, and watching them as they arise, persist, pass away. Vedana, feeling tone, not only watching the particular feelings as they arise and persist and pass away, but getting to know some of the accompanying factors of, you know, the actual experience of watching it arise. The Buddha has a nice simile of a puddle of water, and the feelings are like when gentle rain is falling and you see a bubble arise, stay around for a while, and then it pops. And the feelings, vedana, feeling tone, is like that. It arises, has a bit of a time, and then it passes on, and immediately other ones are coming to take its place. So the feeling tone of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral is what we're looking at and experiencing. So when any mental or physical experience that we have comes with a feeling tone of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And knowing these fully is our task at hand, because they come with accompanying inclinations or underlying tendencies, so that when feeling is pleasant, you can watch the tendency for the mind to want to go and indulge and have more and seek the that pleasant feeling to be, you want it to persist. So it evokes the quality of desire, the defilement of desire, craving, wanting. Unpleasant, of course, is just the opposite. It stimulates a wanting to get away from, aversion. So we can watch that too, as it that sense of aversion, wanting to get away from an unpleasant feeling. We can watch that as it arises, as it persists, and if we're mindful and clearly aware, as it fades away.